Live from the heart of Los Angeles, this is the online edition of the Life Changes Show.
Look at the bright lights. Look at the bright lights.
With tonight's guest, from Chef on Tour, Chef Charles Webb.
Look at the night sky. Look at the night sky.
And performance guest, Rama Duke. I am Mark Legere, and now our host, the MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
I am very excited about today's show for many, many reasons. And one of the reasons that I actually wasn't expecting, but in learning more about our guest and learning more about what he does and where his heart is and how it aligns with his passion and mission and all of that, it started to connect me to something very special that I didn't know was very special when I was experiencing it. I don't know about some of you, but I, growing up, used to get to sit around the table, well, get to, because sometimes I didn't want to, but I had to, but most of the time I wanted to, sit around the table with the whole family and have dinner together every single night at the same time, all together. And we would be served by our mother, and then once the food was on the table, we would all say a prayer, and then we would eat. And while we ate, our first course and then our second course and on occasion dessert, usually dessert, and we would talk. And my dad would tell us stories about growing up in Italy, a place we had not been to at the time, and would share about his family, people we had not met at the time, and as would my mother and my grandmother. And some of them were funny, and some of them were interesting, and some of them were a little sad. They would reminisce, and then they'd ask us about our day and school and what happened and what we learned. And little did I know that what we were doing is no longer normal. And on occasion, people do this on special occasion, like Thanksgiving or Christmas or maybe birthdays. I look back on that and I realize that now is the time for us to talk about this, because I have a feeling we need this in our lives. I do, in our lives more than maybe ever.
I completely agree. In or at least my early culinary experiences were different kinds of family engagement. So my happiest memories actually were going out in Chicago. And that is the city that I came to know fine dining. So very excited for today.
Oh, and what a connection. So we have somebody to thank for this. And
Umi, I was going to bring it up later on in the show, but Umi McGuckin, we're so grateful to you for introducing us to Charles Webb and so many good stories that we've had together on our way to the show.
Well, yes. Well, interesting you mentioned stories, because connecting people with food, culture, and storytelling, our episode 822 with our interview guest is Chef Charles Webb. He is voted number one private chef in Chicago. He is an entrepreneur. He's a world traveler. He's a producer and host of Chef on Tour. We are happy to have him with us. Welcome, Chef Charles, to the Life Changes Show.
Buonasera e buonasera a tutti. Good evening, and thank you so much for having me here.
It's a pleasure to have you here. I thank you for saying that in Italian. I have a feeling you can say that in many languages.
I laid my head in Italy for a small business school once upon a time, and I went to a culinary school there as well in Rome called Gambero Rosso. And I've spent a lot of time jaunting through the world and living in 9 different countries. So you're absolutely right. There's a tale or two along the way.
Well, hopefully we'll get to a tale or two. And thank you for bringing that experience of growing up around the table and the stories and all of that. We'll get deeper into it, but what was your experience growing up with food and eating?
I was very fortunate that, I grew up in the late 70s, and my parents were divorced, and that was something you didn't see very often in the late 70s. And so my mom went to go work full time. She worked in retail, and so those were very grueling and unforgiving, hours on her feet, and she unfortunately had to, make some decisions. And one of those decisions was, how could I babysit myself and learn how to cook and feed myself? And there was no processed foods or,
Wow.
any of that jazz. It was kind of like, I mean, I'm not going to say that, the little pigs in the blanket that I learned how to make were processed, because that was. But she kept it as clean as possible, and she was like the cornerstone for me learning about food and what that looked like. And when we did get the opportunity to spend time together around a table, because I am an only child, I was fortunate that my mom would cook everything from scratch. So there were a lot of tales that were told, and there was a lot of catching up with life and just a lot of learning, which, obviously we always talk about in retrospect what that looked like. And it just kind of molded a piece of me, when which I didn't even realize until later in life.
So, is it important for you to just have it mold you, or you bringing it to other people and have it mold them?
I think it serves as a tool for vice versa. From what I've seen, it's where everything kind of starts and ends. I think a lot of times people think that, business is done in boardrooms, when it's really done over a meal, or, breaking bread with someone, getting to know someone, understanding what that looks like, hearing those stories, understand how that resonates with us. And even today, where you don't see a lot of families getting together at 6 p.m. for that meal and saying a prayer and, kind of talking about their days, because we live very, our lives are just structured differently now. But, I do see my friends who have children try to recreate that at least once a week, whereas, for you, it was probably every day of the week. But it's the driver. It's extremely important, from business to personal, from family to friends, getting together and just talking about it over a meal.
What I'm excited about, what some of what you're doing, and this conversation, is the fact that a lot of it, not having had the experience or not even knowing that we could benefit from it, a lot of people wouldn't know how to go about it. And interestingly enough, you started, I think, early in your chef career, bringing experiences to people through food right in their homes, right, as a private chef.
That's right. So, I did learn a lot about food. My trajectory was not to stay in food and beverage. It really was to go work on Wall Street, which I eventually did. And when I saw the towers fall and a lot of things changed, I went back into food and beverage. And then, moving all the way back to answer, that question, absolutely. That was kind of the driver for me, is how creating these experiences for people in their homes and just observing what that dynamic was like, that interaction was like. And then, certainly things like Jeffersonian dinners and kind of curating experiences, and then understanding, I think it's extremely important for people to understand, whatever it is that you do, you want to find your competitive advantage or advantages to distinguish yourself. And gosh, we all know that there are a lot of chefs out there in this world, and there are a lot of great chefs. There are a lot of, titled chefs. There are a lot of untitled chefs, even grannies who are cooking better than chefs. So, it's it, you know, I mean, the Nona, right? The Nona is really the
Right.
Italian for grannies. The Nona, or, that's where the foundation is, really understanding where the story of food actually came from. But being able to curate that back, and being able to, bring people together with that, became really a tool to develop, I guess, a deeper voice in what I was doing.
Well, let's actually, you mentioned food, and let's start with food. If we eat to nourish ourselves, potentially we could, if we just eat to nourish ourselves, we could just take a protein shake, or something on the go. We're getting all the nutrients, all the vitamins are listed on the outside of the thing. And that only takes a few minutes. But the experience that you're talking about with food is completely different. Tell us why that may be important to have in our lives.
I think for food itself, I mean, there are so many different ways we can go with, in so many directions we could go with that. I mean, food is medicine, which is extremely important. Food and just the history behind products and why we think certain products came from one part of the world and what they mean and how they actually ended up in another part of the world. And they, like, I think a lot of people think things like pasta or pizza might have, began and ended in Italy, and that really wasn't necessarily the case, or how spices have moved their way across the world and what that looks like. That could go in so many different directions.
Okay. In the direction that you may want it to go, why would cooking our own meal or having somebody cook for us or gathering people around for a meal be more important than just having a shake and be nourished and let's all go out and have a drink?
Well, I mean, first off, I always say that, okay, so let's back up. I always think that the integrity of the ingredients and the product really drives the bus, but there's something that's, inherently behind that, and that's our energy. And if you've ever cooked a meal and it didn't turn out the way you wanted it to, a lot of times you'll find that people, their energy might have been off. Maybe they were upset or angry or just didn't want to cook. And so there's that whole piece to it. And then there's the whole process of cooking, and then the process of sharing that with people and sharing the stories and coming together and rekindling, parts of life and what that reminds you of. Just like you might have those memories of when your mom or your grandmother or your whomever it was cooking, what that was like and how those stories were shared. So it's not just the final product that's shared at the dinner table, but it's the whole process of the cooking that allows, it's the whole process of the cooking that allows for that to happen.
And so you bring culture, and you alluded to that. You bring culture into it. So, if somebody is starting out and saying, "Okay, I've been having food on the go. I do fast food. I work." And interestingly enough, you say you started or were headed towards Wall Street. I heard you were actually headed toward the priesthood. So, a lot of things are coming into this story. So, culture.
Yeah. There's been a long there's yeah there's been a lot of hap a lot happening along the way. I think when you refer to that, well, you really dug in and found out a little bit about me. So, when I was a kid, and I think that resonates with me still to this day. I just thought that I was I we're Mexican, Italian, and Irish. That's my ethnicity. When my parents got divorced, I spent more time with my mom's side of the family, and I was with more of the Mexican side of the family. I lived in Mexico for a bit in Irapuato, Guanajuato. Back in the day when we would go around by a car and, traveling throughout Mexico, with the family and in a vehicle and, stopping at different towns and, of course, seeing the churches and then, of course, understanding how that resonated with me and, taking that all the way up to this moment in time in my life on how I try to make the world a better place, leveraging food as a tool for social change. So there's that whole piece. And then, I guess the other piece about, like going into the business world and going on Wall Street. And, I had worked in great restaurants to put myself through school. And as I did, that allowed me to pay for my undergrad degree and go to, business school in Rome and then come back. And then eventually I moved to New York and I went to go work for CIBC Oppenheimer and what that looked like. And then, like I said, a lot of things changed along the way.
As I'm talking to you, I'm thinking you've experienced different cultures, and there's a, in a sense, there's a culture that you've cultivated in just experiencing your life. And so culture could mean a lot of different things, like food, like storytelling, like anything else. Potentially choosing food at different times, or connecting with the culture behind the food, like you started saying, how spices traveled and food and all that. So how important is potentially culture in a particular meal at a particular point?
Yeah, one of the first things that I would say about that is I travel quite a bit, and I go to places that I've lived or places that I know pretty well. But then there are times that I go to places that I don't know well. And one of the first places that I stop when I go to a different part of the world is the grocery store, because the grocery store tells me so much culturally about what's happening. It tells me how they consume, why they consume the way they consume. It tells me what pricing should be, so I'm able to understand why pricing is one way opposed to another. It tells me about the ingredients that they can source, in a regular situation. So it doesn't mean that we're at the best grocery store, but we are at the grocery store for the people. And so, you know, it's really important to understand how that affects understanding that dynamic of how people consume.
Wow. Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. That's the major cultural shift right there. Like, why are people doing, and you know, like, I've been in Brazil for about 22 years now. Even though Chicago is my home base, I do spend anywhere from 1 to 2 to 3 to 4 months in Brazil every year. And and it's such a diverse country. You know, you have the Northeast, then you have the North, you have Bahia, which was African. You go into the central part, and you just have a Portuguese dynamic. The largest Japanese population outside of Japan was there, so that influences food. A very strong Lebanese, very robust Lebanese population. You drop down, you have German, Italian, Swiss, and you have changing. What am I looking for? You just have a variety of changing flavors and textures and things that happen that people have brought from different parts of the world, and that's laid out. And it's kind of like, in a lot of ways, as big as that country is, it's kind of like America. You know, we're also the exact same way of why we consume what we consume, because how it was ingrained locally by people who migrated to the United States.
And all of that, in all of that, there's a story. and speaking of stories, how important do you think telling stories is to all of what we're talking about?
It's the biggest driver. I think it plays an extremely important part of how we interact, how we consume information, how we learn about each other, how we learn about our surroundings. What does that look like from a personal and professional, from an individual or from a group standpoint? I mean, it touches so many different pieces of our heart and our soul.
You and I were talking about, for example, La Posada, right? And the foods associated with it, the songs associated with that celebration, and what it means to them, and the kids getting involved, the whole family. And it, you were sharing that story with me, and I just had a visual and an experience of something, and I wanted to experience it through your eyes. And you can do that for people by your show, by food, by sharing the stories. That's what you do.
Yeah, Chef on Tour, really touches on a lot of different pieces, but I think that one of the biggest pieces was understanding, for me, it was understanding what my audience wanted. And I think as people travel around the world, whether it's enotourism or gastrotourism or ecotourism, or they become a digital nomad, or they're, whatever the reason is that they're traveling for, their travel purposes, it was really important just to kind of dial in and understand what the vibe of the city was. And what better way to do that than the storytellers that we find in different parts of the world? And we find these storytellers around things that are all around us already: art, music, fashion, sustainability more now. Gastronomy, of course, is a big driver. Wellness and fitness. So, we meet with all of these people who are driving that home with what they do, and we just love to tap in and, hear their stories and understand the why, understand where their challenges have been, why they're succeeding, why their city is great for what they're doing, and what impact they look to have locally in their community and beyond in the world. And then, of course, what is their segment, the segment of their industry, what does it mean to their city and or community, and then what does it mean to the world? For example, we were just in Barcelona. Before that, we were in Medellin. So someone who's talking about art, for example, might talk about, the importance of art in their city, very rich, art cities. And then, of course, what does that look like for the new artist, and what kind of impact are they having on the planet?
So, interestingly enough, I was reading in some information about you, like in Colombia, you were talking about lion's mane mushrooms, right? And you're also talking about cannabis.
Right.
Do they
Right.
use it in the
So,
food?
yeah, I mean, I think, well, I think that, people are learning how to work with all of those products. It just seems like for example, in the US, we've seen, Windy City creating lion's mane mushrooms here in Chicago. And this has been going on for 5, 6 years now. But, that's been something that's been consumed on the West Coast and on the East Coast a little more. And they were a little more ahead of that curve and a little more accepting. They were kind of trendsetters, so to speak. So as that's the case, and of course, the legalization of cannabis and what does that look like? Using CBD in food, using cannabis in food, moving from the coast to different parts. Now it's legalized here. Understanding what that looks like from a, medicinal, angle. And then, of course, dropping in everything else in between, all of the other products that we're seeing kind of surface from a global standpoint, becoming more and more regular staples in our pantry and in our refrigerator, freezer, because we're seeing all of these, we're just seeing a shift in how people consume.
Talk about shift in how people consume. It's interesting how there are people that put certain things out forward in front of people on television in the past more than now, I think. And for example, with you, I saw so many interesting names that we have heard, celebrities, this and that, big parties and yachts and da da da. And when we started to talk, you told me stories of people in small towns that are doing things to help their community, and how can you help, or how can you get more of the world to help those people? My hat's off to you, and thank you for presenting that kind of thing in the show. And it seems to me that's you. Where did this importance of that over maybe anything else at this moment come to you?
Yeah, I think that there's just been some changes in my life along the way. But I think when you go back to, like, priesthood at 8 years old, when I was, contemplating or whatever that was, like how as you see people in this world who may struggle or might have a harder time, I always think, who am I when I take off my chef coat, or who's a doctor when they take off their doctor's coat, or whatever your profession is, you take off your suit, and who are you? Who are you to your family? Who are you to your friends? Who are you to your community? Who are you internally in this country? Who are you externally? And I think about myself, and as really gained a stronger voice, and as the voice continues to be stronger and ripples across the world with what we're doing and how we're doing it. I think one of the messages that we definitely want to bring along with us beyond, travel, gastronomy, and lifestyle, and all those little pieces of lifestyle that I mentioned earlier, is really how do I leverage that to become better human on this planet. And I always say, if I could save the world, I would, but I'm only one person. But I mean, case study one, you know, like when we were in Medellin, we were with a wonderful woman named Andrea, who is, you know, she was a Colombian, she was adopted, grew up in Holland, came back to Colombia, and is now helping an area called Comuna Tres. She's taken on a very lofty endeavor to create a nonprofit or a foundation where she's able to help these 200 families. She has 200 families that she helped under her wing, and she helped them with a variety of resources. And when we found her through a mutual friend, and when we were trying to figure out like who was going to be the foundation that we wanted to support in Medellin, when we found her, I mean, you know, when we went there, we ran through the market, we ran through the Minorista in Medellin, and then we went there to Comuna Tres, and we were there to help her. You know, the biggest question I asked her was, where are your, you know, where are your pain points, where are your challenges? You know, how do you get beyond them? Is it getting food, right? She's like, Charles, you would think it's getting food or getting resources for food, but most of these children are malnourished because most of these families, 137 of them out of the 200, don't have a stove. You know, that blew me away. So, you know, outside of being able to show all of the great things through the content that we create, and hearing her story and her mission with what she's doing, of course, I'm purpose driven. So I said, you know, we're going to find 137 stoves for you. And, you know, she all but cried right there. And she's like, but how are you going to do that? Because I'm self, you know, I'm still startup mode, and, you know, I'm self-funded. I've got, you know, one great woman who believes in me, Jane Strauss. But I'm like, you know, I mean, a lot of people believe in me, but, you know, like who've helped along the way. But I mean, I'll tell you know, I have great clients, and I'm going to do a dinner here in Chicago. And we're going to raise the funds that they need to be able to help those folks in Medellin. And like I said, if I can create impact with what I'm doing, well, you better believe we're going to do it. And unfortunately, and fortunately, there are a lot of Andreas out there in the world. But fortunately, you know, we could all make a difference.
Well, I should say at this point, if people want to make a difference right along with you, Chef Charles Webb is where they can go and learn how and learn more and experience you and follow you. Chef Charles Webb, WEBB.com, and on social media as well. We have a video clip of you sharing some of your story. And I have to say, listening to you, talking to you, learning about you, this part of your life seems like, whoa, this man is on something important, and we're happy to be able to share. And I also have to say, but how does one get to be in that place where they got it all going on? And sometimes it takes, I don't know, the bio says 92. I bet it's over 100 jobs now.
Yeah, I mean, well, 92 employers and 92 employers,
Wow.
let's put it that 92 employers. Yeah, I
Okay.
remember once upon a time I was doing an interview for a national publication at my mom's home, and he had overheard the whole interview that I did, and she said, Charles, you know, you can't just, you know, come out and say it's 88. And, you know, and so my mom retired to her room, and at that time I retired to the living room. And so I ended up getting on my laptop and typing it out, and I was like, you know what? She's always right. She's like, all right, well, what was it? You know, like an hour later, I came back to her and I printed it out, and I was like, it's actually 92. But after 92, I decided that I was never going to work for anyone ever again as their employee. Although that's not the case when I do different events and work with different clients or brand activations or whatever it looks like. But it's very, very different. So I really pivoted into becoming an entrepreneur in the food and beverage space and what that looked like. And then, of course, it's just led to me honing more into, and as I welcome everyone who should be doing this, you know, really hone into more about what you love and what is your mission and what is your purpose on this planet.
Well, there's a goal. And actually, as we're talking about goals, obviously hiring you and or working with you or coming to one of your events is certainly a way to get to experience and learn and grow from you and with you. What could people do today, like if they decided, I'm going to do something that Chef Charles recommends that I can do in my home, either for my family or for my partner or just even for me or my group of friends? What could I do today or tomorrow or plan to do in a short period of time that is a easy first step to bring culture, food, and storytelling?
Yeah. So, you know, a journey of a million
or
miles.
Or watch your show.
Yeah. Watch. Well, I mean,
together,
you know, gonna,
with your family, you know, and friends.
With your friends, and then sit down and make a meal together. And then, you know, ask yourself, like, you know, how can, you know, are these things things that resonate with us? And if they are, how do we, you know, start to make an imprint or a footprint, rather? And, you know, the footprint doesn't have to be the biggest footprint in the world. Maybe you're helping your community in one way, or maybe you're, you know, finding a person in the world. You know, I mean, I still help people from like my tuk-tuk driver in Sri Lanka, you know, and helping him and his family. So, like, you know, it doesn't have to be, you know, millions of dollars and hours of work, but, you know, just putting a little bit out there. You know, just putting a little bit out there, whether it's locally in your community, or and do it where maybe do it where it's fun. Maybe somewhere like, hey, I like traveling to, I don't know, Colombia as an example. I like traveling to Colombia. Let me try to find a nonprofit or a group that's doing something cool. And maybe that's something that through the jaunting of art galleries and restaurants and everything else, I could spend an hour with these folks and see how I can, you know, make a little difference. And you know what? You do make a difference. You make a big difference, because people really, they need that support, and they really, it's a very big undertaking, but we can all make a difference. You know, we can all make a difference.
Wow. Well, thank you for that. It's a great way to feel like we're connected in a way, like we all need to eat. And we all have a story, and whether we know it or not, we are in a culture or have grown up in one, whether we're connected to it or not. But to find connections and start to weave that, something that you're really bringing forward here, and I thank you for that. And anything else you want to add to that, Chef Charles?
Well, you know, yeah, you know, you mentioned Umi earlier, and Umi. So
yeah.
How I came along meeting Umi was Derek McKenzie, who's the drummer for Jamiroquai. We were bringing him out to Barcelona to do one of the dinners for Chef on Tour, and he came in and he's fun. But it was really the conversation that him and I had, and then the follow-up conversation that Umi and I had about, and that's where the alignment was. We found the alignment in, you know, like how can we continually help our communities and help people in the world, without it taking, without it overly consuming us as entrepreneurs or as artists or whatever that may mean. And so, yeah, I mean, like we all have our families and our friends and our jobs and our lives and our aspirations and everything that we, you know, we're working on. But, you know, we're just talking about a small injection of making a difference. Yeah. So, you know, if I could help anyone along the way, I'm always open, you know. There's not an agency that runs my Instagram. I run my own, built it to a point where, you know, I'm very dialed into the community. And as we pivot into other social media platforms and what that looks like, you know, just being able to leverage that and keep it, you know, as open as possible to help people understand maybe what those first steps could or should be.
Very nice. Well, how do we follow you on Instagram?
Yeah, we keep it as simple as possible, at Chef Charles Webb. Two B's, like you mentioned earlier. Don't forget that. Sometimes, you know, you get one B. You know, in Brazil, they like to put two Fs. But it's C-H-E-F, C-H-A-R-L-E-S, and then W-E-B-B. That's Instagram. You got the website. And those are like the two main places that I hang out at.
Chef Charles, thank you for hanging out with us here and sharing your wisdom and your stories. And I look forward to sharing food someday as well.
Yeah, let's break a little bread. I'll get out to Cali and let's do it, and let's bring the right energies together. It would be my pleasure.
Well, thank you so much for sharing. And again, Chef Charles Webb, WEBB.com, and on the social medias. And if you forget, we have links to Chef Charles Webb on the Life Changes Show page for him there. Find it there on our website. What a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Grazie a tutti. Thank you. Thank you. Thanks to everyone. We'll see you out there on the web.
Prego, prego, Chef Charles Webb. And with that, we have our Ask Dorothy segment.
Dear Dorothy, this is Karen, and I am finding it more and more difficult every day to discern what is real and what is AI. Today, a friend shared with me a very interesting video of a man morphing into a lion and a woman morphing into a wolf. The presentation was impressive, but I just knew that it couldn't be real. However, after seeing it, I wondered how many other videos we are shown that are real. What is the simplest way to figure out what is actually real?
Dear Karen, in today's world, discerning what videos are real can be challenging, especially with the prevalence of digital manipulation. Since we live in a world flooded with information, it's easy to be overwhelmed and confused. So I congratulate you for following your intuition and feelings that this particular video was not real. And when in the future your intuition has you questioning the validity of a video, the first step to get to the truth is to research and then research some more. Advances in technology like deepfakes or AI-generated content make it easier to create realistic but false images, videos, and audio. Checking the source of the video is a great start. Look for credentials, expertise, and past work to assess credibility. And then see if you can find the same video from a variety of independent sources. Discerning what is real requires careful attention to the quality of sources, cross-referencing facts, and applying critical thinking. You can find more information at psychologytoday.com, which has several excellent articles on how to discern what is real. If you choose to do the research, I feel you can navigate today's complex information environment with greater confidence, and I look forward to hearing of your progress.
Thank you, Dorothy. And if you have a question for Dorothy, you can write her for real at askdorothy@lifechangesshow.com.
For our performance segment, we have a special guest with us. She is an EDM and rock artist, singer, songwriter. She is Rama Duke. Welcome, Rama, to the Life Changes Show.
Hello, happy. So happy to be here.
So happy to have you with us. You are so much fun. Like, I not only started to get into your music, then I found a whole different genre, and then I got talking to you, and we went into deep stories about how your life is, you're laughing already because you know.
Oh, yeah.
Your life is like, in a sense, it's actually kind of magical.
Thank you.
Like, there have been hard parts that have led to interesting things, and then magic happens. Let's talk about one great story that you have where you became known as an EDM artist.
Yep.
Before you even knew you were becoming an EDM artist, before you even knew what EDM was.
Basically.
I How does that happen?
I was familiar with the music. It was around me, but it's not something that I grew up on grunge and I grew up on a lot of things, but I had just finished a rock album with some of my favorite players that I had met in LA, like throughout my music career. And, you know, I was trying to get that out. And I met this manager, Gary Salzman, and the late Gary Salzman. And he was like, wow, this is a great record. But, you know, let's like get your name out there a little bit. And then we'll put that out. So I was like, okay, great. Like, just tell me what to do. And he was like, I have these songs. I want you to write top lines for them. And, you know, I guess I should have known what top line was being in the music industry, but I just, it didn't like strike me as anything. I just thought I was writing lyrics for someone. So I got these EDM tracks and I wrote to them. And he was like, oh, great. One of them got picked. And I was like, that's amazing. And a few days later, I found out. He was like, okay, well, it's you coming out. You know, they're asking me for like my picture. And I was like, wait, what do you mean? And he was like, no, you're singing the song. And I was just kind of like, okay, you know, it was just like that. It was like, bam. So I, you know, obviously started listening and getting familiar, but not too familiar, because I think it's kind of special. I mean, now I'm very familiar, but it kind of gave me a way to write my own way without kind of copying any trends or, you know. It was a new experience for me, to say the least.
I'll say, and a good experience for the audience, because audiences grew knowing you as such. But before we get more into that, and we're going to get to hear an EDM song first of yours. So Rama, your story of coming to Hollywood actually is like a fairy tale that a lot of people wish they had. Tell us about that.
It's funny you say that, because it is kind of like, you know, a Hollywood story. I mean, I moved to LA when I was 12, and I didn't really have, I mean, I had always like been in choirs. I had always done music, but I never had any like aspirations to be in the music industry. And I kind of came from my home where I was getting in a lot of trouble, and I came to live with my grandparents in LA, and they were like, look, you know, you sing, so we're going to put you in, there's a school called the Los Angeles County High School of the Arts. We want you to try out for it. We think, you know, it'd be good for you. And one of the songs I had to learn is Quiero Mio Bien, which is like, hopefully I'm saying it right, an Italian song and opera song. So they got me a vocal teacher. And the last few days of us doing that, she gave me a flyer and she was like, you should go to this. And on the same day that I had my audition for the school, we went to this audition off of this flyer, and it was a production company, like basically looking for the next Britney Spears. Like they had everyone in a room, like dancing these certain dances and singing in a like little kumbaya circle, like Britney Spears songs. And it was kind of strange for me, but I just did my thing and then didn't think much of it. And then 3 days later, they called to sign me to their production company. And then from there, you know, we did an album and they started shopping me to different labels. And then that's how I got signed to Hollywood Records.
Well, and I'm laughing because there are so many stories that I remember that you shared. It's like, okay, which one? And I think what we should do right now is actually listen to one of your EDM pieces. And then we'll get into another story. But tell us about this piece. We're going to get to hear Tunnel Vision. And this is actually special because you haven't released an EDM song in a while, right?
Yeah, it's been about 4 years. I took a break after my manager died from COVID, actually. And I was wanting to do another genre of music. And so I was like a little confused, and I just kind of took a break from everything. And then I moved to Greece 2 years ago now. And yeah, so I started contacting like my old contacts and Dimension, who I did this track with. I've done other songs with, and I was like, yo, I want to write. And so it was really exciting to do this song. And this song is, it's basically about, you know, you're stressed and you're tired and you're unhappy, but there's like so many things that you don't see that are positive. And ooh, like life is always worth fighting for. So that's basically what I wrote this song about.
Wow. And you can dance to it too. Here is Rama Duke's pre-recorded
little heavy
song. What's that?
I said a little heavy, you know, but a little you can heavy. Also get down.
Here is Rama Duke's EDM song, pre-recorded, Tunnel Vision, on the Life Changers.
Surrounded by beautiful dreams, feel your heart giving.
Wow. And there it is. Rama Duke. We'll find her on the socials, especially Instagram, at Rama Duke, R-A-M-A Duke, D-U-K-E. Rama, like we were saying earlier, there's so many pieces of your story, and I think people are just going to have to wait for the movie. But in the meantime, you know, I like how you threw out there, I moved to Greece, and it wasn't a light decision, but there's so many factors, and there's one factor in particular that really touched me, how you cared to make sure that somebody in your life felt special and taken into consideration before you just picked up and moved. Maybe unlike you had learned the opposite growing up, or you felt the opposite growing up because you moved a lot, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
So could you elaborate on that? Because there's a lesson in there, I think, for all of us.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. So as a child, I moved around a lot. When my mother met my stepfather, we moved to Moscow when I was 9. Then I was put in a boarding school in England. We moved around to Prague and different places. And then, you know, finally settling in California. And, you know, I was never like asked, as I'm sure like a lot of us from that generation, but, you know, my feelings weren't actually taken into consideration about that kind of thing. It was just like, hey, by the way, we're leaving in a week, you know? And I was like, wait, but I'm going into this grade and all my friends. And, so it was kind of jarring. Growing up. And as you were saying, I have a 10-year-old daughter. And so, you know, one day I was sitting around in California and, you know, I had a choice to like, I was moving and I was just like, gosh, I just want to move somewhere. I just want to move to Europe. And, I, you know, just looked up online, where can I wake up in a vacation? And a bunch of different places came up and I was doing research and, you know, a lot of the research had to do with like, do they speak English? Like how are they with kids? Like, how is the family? You know, a lot of different factors. And, you know, I asked my daughter, I was like, look, do you want to do this? And she was, you know, luckily she's just like me. She was like, absolutely. Like let's do it. You know? And I was like, I just want you to know that we can move back to America whenever you want. Like we're going to go there for 8 months. And if you don't like it, we'll move, you know? And we have an understanding even now, you know, to this day where it's like, we do everything together. Like this is a me and you situation. So I'm very lucky that she's, you know, kind of a fly by the seat of her pants girl like me. But yeah, I definitely have that respect factor with her. And I think it's really important. Yeah.
Well, respect to you, Rama. Thank you for sharing that with our audience. And so speaking of sharing with our audience, this is really special because you shared in your story, actually, that you did a rock album that mm-hmm. you were going to release. And then what happened? We know what happened with EDM, but was any rock, anything ever released?
I mean, here's the funny thing. No, you know, even like I was with Hollywood Records, like even to go back from like 17 to 20. And we had literally 5 finished albums. Every year it was like, no, I don't like that, or they didn't like it, or I didn't. And it was a rock album in the end. And I was so happy. And they ended up changing CEOs. And they actually, like the day that I got dropped, sorry to say this, but they were like, we don't know what to do with a Black artist doing rock. So that didn't come out.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So then throughout my career, you know, I still had my rock band. I kept trying and I had finally like gotten all these people together, like that I had worked with over the years, and did a rock record. And Scott Chesick from the American All American Rejects actually did it with me, and I was just really excited about it. And yeah, so that was me trying to get it signed. And it was also when things were really different. It was like, you know, they weren't signing for We Like This Record. They were signing off of, you know, how many followers you had, Instagram likes. You know, I had met with my old manager and he was like, Rama, that's not how it happens anymore, you know? So, so anyway, yeah, this is actually not, yeah, no, this is from that record, but, yeah, so this is yet to be released, but I, you know, I do have plans on making that happen eventually.
Well, it sounds like it's going to happen right now here on the Life Changes show. And so we get to feature you as a rock artist with this song, and you've shared so much about yourself, actually. We haven't touched on the subject in this song. Maybe now's a good time to do it. Tell us what Monsters is about.
Absolutely. When I wrote this, I was struggling a lot with addiction. I was in full-blown alcoholism, and I was totally, totally hopeless. And this song, you know, is basically about, you know, when you're in addiction, people think, oh, you can just stop. Like, you're going to do it for your daughter. You're going to do it for this person. You're going to do it for your husband. You're going to do it. And it has nothing to do with other people. Like, if you want to stop, you know, and also it doesn't always have to do with wanting to stop, you know, it's a disease. So the song is about having, you know, those demons in your head. And I'm just basically telling a loved one, you know, love can't fix this, you know. I don't know if I can fix it, but you know, you're not going to fix it. So that's what the song's about.
Do you want to share where you are with that right now?
Yes, actually, April 1st, I will be 8 years sober. So
woohoo!
Thank you. Yeah, it's very excited about that.
Wow. Well, thank you for sharing that. Thank you for sharing this song.
Thank you.
This is so special. And actually, what is also special about this is that you went into a studio and just yesterday, I think, or the day before, and you recorded this for us live. And you also sent us a video, which we posted on the Life Changes Show website or webpage for Rama Duke. So find that there, but you'll get to hear it here first. Here is Rama Duke singing her song for the Life Changes Show, pre-recorded Monsters.
Morning is my darkness. Thank you. and you can't take it away, away. The walls that keep the monsters in my head.
And there it is, Monsters with Rama Duke, by Rama Duke. As a matter of fact, Rama, did you also play the guitar in that?
I didn't, no.
I'm sorry?
No, I didn't. My,
oh, you didn't, okay.
One of my best friends, yeah, that's been in all my bands, actually sent it on over to me, so.
Yeah. Nice. Well, thank you, best friend. That was great. So find Rama Duke on Instagram at Rama, R-A-M-A, and then Duke, D-U-K-E. We have her Spotify link. We have that video that we talked about where you'll see her performing that very song, and a YouTube channel video as well. Go enjoy her, find her wherever. As a matter of fact, I want to, when you're on your world tour, and I want to catch you doing that song live, Rama.
Yes, I can't wait. I cannot wait. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you for being on the show, sharing like you have, and sharing this new exciting music, all of it, actually. All the best to you.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure to be on here.
Our pleasure. Thank you. So with that, with a big thank you once again to Rama Duke, and another big thank you to Chef Charles Webb. That is our show. On behalf of our executive producer, Dorothy Lee Donahue, and our executive producer and co-host, Mark Lejeune, I am your host, Filippo Voltaggio, reminding you that as your life changes, like ours surely did tonight, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to the Life Changes Show on the BBS Radio Network. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, and visit us online at lifechangesnetwork.com, on Facebook at The Life Changes Show, and on Twitter at Life Changes Show. Join us again next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. The Life Changes Network is an entertainment network. The views and opinions expressed are those of the guests and participants and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Life Changes.